Coming up on Tech News Today, we are here in Las Vegas at the NAB convention. Here at the booth, the Live View booth, we're having a lot of fun. Megan and I talk a little bit about some of the cool things that we've seen here since we arrived. Also, Verizon and possibly Yellow Pages are getting close to Yahoo. Siri spills the beans on the upcoming WWDC, and a drone may have collided with a passenger plane. The first time, if that is the case, that that's happened. We're going to talk about all that and a whole lot more next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1494, recorded Monday, April 18th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by PillPack, a full-service online pharmacy that combines modern technology, convenient packaging, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit pillpack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescription.
And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit epson.com/ecotank to find out more.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the tech you need and the tech that you don't need, how technology affects our daily lives. And today we're live from NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. It's good to be here. I have not been to Vegas in, I don't know, probably the last time I came to Vegas was with Twit, however many years ago. So it's good to be back. There's now a Ferris wheel that's like super huge in the sky that apparently goes really super slow.
Yep.
It's like a 45-minute tour on a gigantic Ferris wheel.
I also introduced you to both Uber and Lyft.
That's true.
That was
okay,
very exciting.
Maybe talk about this just very briefly at the top of the show. I had never
Uber Virgin.
We've talked about it plenty of times on the show. Uber, Lyft, ride sharing, all that kind of stuff. So it's not like I'm unfamiliar with what they do, but I'd never actually hailed, you know, an Uber or a Lyft or ridden in one or talked to a driver to kind of see their back. It's been very fascinating. It's been a very good trip from that regard. I feel so like learned in the world of ride share.
Yeah. You were pretty cute in there. You were like, this is my first time in an Uber. I just took a Lyft before. And yeah, it was great. I loved both our Uber and our Lyft drivers. Very happy with the service.
This morning, I did it by myself. So yeah. I didn't do it, you know, with the aid of you experienced Uber and Lyft drivers. So
I've even done that here? Too.
No, I did Lyft, actually.
Lyft here. It's like a 5-minute walk here.
Well, I didn't. I was really excited to use it. What can I say? I've never used it before.
You're going to be Ubering everywhere. You're like, I need to go to the bathroom. I think I'll take an Uber there.
Hey, that might happen. All right. Well, let's start talking about some news, man. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today, starting with Yahoo. Today's the deadline for suitors interested in buying Yahoo to place a preliminary bid, anyways. As we've definitely talked previously on the show, Verizon is ahead of the pack. And now finds itself in a better position as many of the high kind of profile potential suitors have dropped out. Suitors, I'm acting as if they're dating. Alphabet, Comcast, AT&T, Barry Diller's Interactive Corp, they've all dropped out. Also, Time Inc. has reportedly dropped out. They concluded that the transition was just too difficult, too risky, essentially, which, I mean, we've been talking about plenty. It's interesting to hear someone who's really kind of evaluated from a broad monetary standpoint and say, yeah, we're not going there. We're not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I mean, I have been fascinated with the story. I think the better analogy of suitors is like what we've talked about before. It's like a run-down house in San Francisco. Like, you know it's going to be worth something. There's got some good bones in there. But, you know, like you might walk into the kitchen and fall right through to the basement. You know, it's not a successful company right now. I mean, they've done a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, they own Tumblr. They bought Tumblr. And then it's like, that was all the millennials were on Tumblr. They could have done something with that. And then they didn't. All the millennials went to Snapchat. You know, it's like Google, we give a lot of leeway to companies like Google or Facebook because they have at least one product that we use every day in our life. And then they can do whatever crazy stuff we want. But Yahoo, like, what do they have that we can't live without?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. So Verizon, obviously, top of the list, very interested. They have the cash, and apparently they have the plan to kind of merge Yahoo with its AOL properties. The reality for Verizon right now is that, you know, when it comes to, like, their landline business, that's really, like, they're starting to kind of offload their landline business by and large. Their mobile division, which is really what I think most people know Verizon for, obviously, that's just really kind of slowed down. You know, they aren't getting a whole lot of kind of push in that general direction. So what they're thinking about possibly doing here is combining the assets, AOL, Yahoo, you know, ad inventory, all of that kind of stuff to essentially create a an ad tech platform that would compete with, you know, Facebook and Google, kind of the biggies in the room.
Right. So a company that's really important in the bigger scheme of things, but not one we hear about every day, not one we think about that affects our lives, not one that wants to be in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm. And really making kind of a transition from analog specifically into the digital realm. And this really seems like potentially a next step. Very interesting to note that Yellow Pages is one of these suitors, and we'll continue with that, that's expected to put in a bid. Today's the deadline, so I suppose we'll probably hear a lot more about this over the coming couple of days anyways.
Right, and earnings are reported tomorrow.
Oh,
earnings
right.
Earnings reported, so we'll have that news too. And I'm going to just go on record that saying I do not think it's Marissa Mayer's fault. Like, I think Marissa Mayer's fault. I think that, like, anyone given the mess that she was given wouldn't have done any better.
But she accepted that mess. Therefore, there is a certain level of responsibility that falls on her. Anyone that walks into that is basically, you know, accepting the fact that, yes, it might be a mess. This might be a messy house. If it's still a messy house when I'm done, I lay partial blame for that. But you're right. I mean, the problem was much bigger than Mayer right through the gate. Mm-hmm. But she was okay with it when she signed on. Yeah. So it's kind of part of what you get.
I'd say the house was already old and decrepit, but she also didn't keep it up as she might have.
Yeah, she really needed to paint the living room again.
Yeah,
and she just hasn't yet. It's like, what are you doing? It's not like you don't have something better to do. Paint the living room.
Right.
You know?
Now it's going to be someone else's living room. All right, let's move on. Amazon launched a video streaming service today. They, of course, already had a video streaming service, but now it's debundled from Amazon Prime, and it costs $8.99 a month to $9.99 a month that you pay for Netflix.
Okay.
But there's no new content. I mean, there's some great original content on Amazon.
Yeah,
I'll get
good
in that,
the original content game right now.
But yeah, but I don't think it's not a replacement for Netflix. Like, I have to have both. I'm perfectly happy paying $100 a year for my Amazon Prime, which I think I still can do. They also announced a monthly Prime membership, which was $10.99. So that means you could just cancel at any time. So if all you use is the free shipping, then maybe you would get Amazon Prime just for the holidays and, you know, get all your stuff free shipped. But I use everything. Like, I'm fully bought into the Amazon ecosystem. You know, I have my Amazon Echo, and, you know, I was able to buy that early because I was a Prime member. Like, I feel like the Prime membership has its benefits way beyond the shows that I don't really watch, because I recognize that they're good, the Amazon original content, but they're not part of what I watch.
Yeah, the video side of Amazon itself specifically, like, I've just kind of always, I don't know, I've always seen it as, all right, but they are doing a decent amount of original content, because that's just what you have to do if you have one of these services nowadays, and they're all realizing that. Netflix kind of at the forefront of that, definitely. But it is very interesting that, you know, for the past however many years, everybody's talking about, okay, so you're cutting the cable. What we really want is a la carte this, a la carte that. But when you start adding things up, like, if it's necessary to have Netflix and then also have Amazon Video and then also have Hulu to fill in all the gaps, you're really not saving a whole lot necessarily.
Yeah. And I also need HBO.
And they're making more.
And, you know, I also need Showtime. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, I need it all, yeah. So, I don't like to add it up. I mean, that's why it feels good to subscribe to Amazon Prime, because I do feel like I'm getting so much other stuff in addition to just...
And I think that's a really big key of what's successful for Amazon, is that their video platform isn't necessarily the thing that they're known for. They're known for Prime. The video stuff is factored into that as well. It's like you get this stacked bonus kind of thing with Amazon that you don't get with Netflix.
Yeah.
Netflix does have a cheaper plan, by the way. They have a $7.99
plan. No, not anymore.
It's an SD only plan.
Oh.
It's SD, not HD for streaming.
Why would you do that?
We to save $2, I guess.
Here is blasphemy. But yeah, but I was paying $7.99, and then now, you know, I got grandfathered in, and now I pay $9.99, which is a bummer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I won't give up Netflix either, because I can't watch House of Cards if I don't have Netflix.
Sure.
And my Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt and my Master of None, those are part of my regular watching, in addition to Tech News Today and the other shows.
I do think it's interesting that you can pay monthly, though, as you know, like kind of on demand for shipping. That's a really big thing. But then,
I might switch to that.
It's good for holidays.
Because I mean, I don't know why I would cancel, but I think it's good for some people.
Yep. YouTube is planning to mainstream not only the act of watching video content in 360 degrees, but watching live streamed 360 degree content in real time. Today, the company announced support for 360 degree live streaming as well as spatial audio support for kind of the full immersive effect, which is a nice bonus there. VR, man, it's just going crazy right now. It's interesting to think about where we were even a year ago with just 360 degree immersive video. And now when, you know, I think anytime a company like Google or by extension YouTube gets into it and does this, it almost immediately mainstreams it to a certain degree.
Right.
And I mean, soon we're going to be able to watch live events in live streamed 360 degree video. The Verge is kicking this off with a premiere of R&B artist Dawn on Wednesday. So they're going to be the first kind of event. They're working alongside Google to kind of do that first event. And I don't know, I'm very interested to see this. This is pretty awesome stuff.
We should definitely be next because a lot of people haven't seen the back of your head, and it's awesome.
And it's glorious back there.
So, yeah, I think definitely. I don't know. There are some things that, look, now they can see it.
Oh, no.
Thank you, Brian. This is full 360 degrees.
Thanks, Brian.
Eventually, if you speed it up really fast. I think it's interesting because, I mean, there's so much video now.
See? Yeah. Right there. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. This is why you need 360 degree.
It's a genre thing. Like, we're not ever going to, like, you know, our show is never going to need to, our particular show is never going to need to be in 360.
I don't know. We could have a big blob camera sitting in between us that makes it hard to look around, but that would be the person, you know, who happens to be watching.
Right.
Sitting on the set.
Or we could
Someone
do
would
the
find
show,
that valuable.
We could do the show, like, with interpretive dance.
Okay.
Like technology and interpretive dance. I think then we would require.
That's an idea.
Okay.
That is an idea. That does qualify as an idea.
Okay. It is an idea. Not an idea. Not a good one.
We'll talk about it. Yeah. We'll talk after the show.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyways,
cool,
I'm looking forward
be
to
there.
This.
I mean, for games, it's beginning to feel like we never need to go anywhere. You know, like, why do I need to pay that much money to get tickets to the basketball game? Like, when I can just be there, you know? Like,
yep. Well, and that's a really good example, right? Because, like, courtside seats, obviously coveted, you know, in the world of basketball, there's only a limited amount of those seats that could ever be sold, and they're also very expensive, by the way. But you give someone the ability to virtually put themselves there, and it's not a pre-recorded thing. Like, it still has that excitement of being happening right now. Like, I think that just elevates it, you know, one step further. And people would actually pay for that ability.
Yeah.
I don't know how much people would pay to sit courtside for, like, a really big, major, you know, NBA basketball game. But they would, you know, just for that experience, because it's less than what they'd have to pay in reality. And maybe it's good enough.
Yeah, well, it's we'll see. Our next story is about AI and security. We talk a lot about AI and we talk a lot about security on this show. What about melding them together? An MIT research study said today it created a system called AI Squared. It can predict 85% of cyber attacks. The catch is that they got to this 85% number by also using the input of humans. So it's supervised machine learning, they say, can prevent more cybersecurity attacks. The AI will pick up suspicious activity, and humans look at all the suspicious activity and find out whether it's an attack or not. However, it's still, like, you still need the humans, and so when I was doing some research on this, it feels like it still is too much of a big job for as many attacks as big companies have on them all the time. So a preventive measure might be better than this.
They tested 3.6 billion log lines, over 20 million users in 3 months. So from what I was reading about this, it's really more of a virtual assistant than it is, you know, really, like you say, you know, analyzing and predicting everything on its own autonomously. It's not quite there yet. But I don't know. I mean, if there's a virtual assistant that's learning, like, that human input as you do that over time, you know, it's getting better at predicting and identifying things, they kind of work in tandem. And not having the AI there to kind of pull out kind of that first response, that's an even bigger challenge, you know? So I think it's a great start. I mean, billions of log lines per day. Billions is a large number, and if a computer is willing to do that and then pass off the really important stuff to a human, that still sounds really effective to me.
Right. Yeah, because the computer is looking, the AI is looking for suspicious activity.
Yeah, and patterns.
People are coming in saying that is actually suspicious or that's
right.
Normal. We know what that is.
Right.
It is interesting, because when you think about, like, a lot of malware defense, it's still just like, here's the malware that we already know exists out there, and we're going to prevent that malware from coming into your system. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's not, but there, people are creating it at such a large, such a fast pace that
yeah.
You can't keep up. And it's sort of like saying, oh, okay, well, yeah, like someone already broke into my house and stole all my stuff. And now I know that they already stole it.
Yeah, now I know how they did it then.
Right.
Might not necessarily be how they're going to do it next.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there really is no way to absolutely know.
But this is cool. And this is from CSAIL, which we talked about before. The MIT Computer Science and Artificial mm-hmm. Intelligence Laboratory, and they had the articulated robots that came out in one piece that we love so much.
Love the 3D printed ones you're talking about,
3D
right?
Yes, 3D printed articulated robots in one piece. Hydraulic robots.
Yes, high-powered someday.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time coming, but finally Google Play is releasing the Podcast Hounds with its Google Play Music podcast support. U.S. and Canada at launch, of course, because that's what Google does. And many people, I think Canadians are just happy that they're part of that list to begin with, because most people just kind of, you know, usually expect a Google kind of rollout of a product to be U.S. only for a really long time. Canada, you're involved. Everybody else has to wait. There's no timetable, which is kind of unfortunate, because this podcast, it's not like there's like complex like rights to be negotiated around putting a podcast aggregator together and loading a podcast, but apparently there's something going on here. I am very interested in the fact that there is the Songza playlist engine for the podcast as well as for the music. You know, mm-hmm. if you've used Play Music, and I'm a huge fan of Play Music, I use it all the time. At the very top of the interface, they always have these kind of like curated based on mood or activity, like driving to work, and then you go in there and it'll give you three specific playlists that were kind of hand curated
mm-hmm.
of just songs that kind of fit into that particular mood. Well, they've applied that to podcast, which is an interesting way for discovery, especially when you consider like so many podcasts. Like I pulled up one of the playlists, the very first episode was an hour and a half. I don't know how many times I sit down to listen to a playlist of anything for longer than an hour and a half, and in the case of that playlist, that, you know, at the end of that episode, I would be done with my listening time, you know? I would never get to the other stuff.
I will tell you that I have long searched for a podcast playlist tool. I make my own. Like, I've been doing it since I had my tiny little iPod. Mm-hmm. Like, because I run and I do laundry and all the things, and I need 10 hours, 12, maybe 15 hours a week. That's what I would like.
Yeah.
And I would like it hand-curated so that I just have all the podcasts that I subscribe to.
And you kind of have to manually know which one you're going to do next.
Right.
And, yeah, I suppose there's definitely
But I can't use this because it's only on Android.
That's right. Well, it's on the web. So if you want to use the web interface, you could. I wonder if you could.
I don't listen to podcasts on the web.
I know.
I'm only on my phone.
I know. Neither do I. Yeah. But it's available there. They haven't really said when it's going to be coming to iOS. Should be noted, this is not Google's first time to the podcast party. They had a app on Android called Listen, which was a love-hate type thing. You know, people either were happy that it existed or hated it with a passion. It was launched in 2009. They killed it in 2012, shortly after Google Play was actually released, and now you kind of realize maybe the long-term vision was eventually we'll bring it back in. But good to have kind of an official podcast I don't know, part of the Android ecosystem, although there are plenty of awesome third-party apps that already do this, so it'll be interesting to see how much, you know, how many people are going to get wooed back to the world of Google for this.
Right. I probably will look at the podcast they recommend, the Laughing Out Loud, for example, mm-hmm. which we aren't on. And
Laughing Out Loud? Are we that funny?
We are not on it. But I don't know why.
I don't.
Saying people are laughing out loud at my interpretive dance technology jokes.
Well, we're gonna have to work on that.
Maybe
then.
We need a playlist that's laughing a little bit because they feel sorry. For
Episode like one. Yes.
That was exactly what that was.
That's my interpretive dance, Megan.
Okay. So our next big story comes from Siri. If you want to know when Apple's WWDC, Worldwide Developer Conference, is, apparently you have to ask Siri. So I will ask her.
I wonder if it'll be loud enough.
When is the Worldwide Developers Conference?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty
typical
noisy here.
Classic Siri. When is the Worldwide Developers Conference?
The Worldwide Developers Conference, WWDC, will be held June 13th through June 17th in San Francisco. I can't wait.
He can't wait.
I use the Siri man voice. Yeah, so Siri, June 13th to June 17th, they chose Siri to announce their next conference.
Or did they?
You think that's a leak?
I don't know. Siri might be going rogue. That's all I'm saying.
I hope so.
Was this orchestrated or did Siri slip? I mean, there's no announced date on the Apple site yet. WWDC site still says to that 2015 information, not 2016. So really, I mean, Siri's the first to come out with this information. I'm just saying, you know, maybe it was an accident.
Maybe, but
probably not.
I think hardcore Apple fans, you know, love WWDC, or I think there's like dub dub. I think is what the kids call it. The cool kids dub dub. But if you're going to make a splash for a developers conference, I think this is one way to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's not like this is outside of the realm of what Apple does. There was an event last September, the September 9th event, mm-hmm. which was the iPhone 6S and the 6S Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, if you remember, the invites that went out to the press actually printed, "Hey Siri, give us a hint."
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, everybody obviously went to their iPhone mm-hmm. and said, "Hey Siri, give us a hint," and Siri was the one that announced mm-hmm. the date. So it's kind of within the realities of what Apple does to kind of build up a little bit of momentum, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, coming up, what we found roaming the floor of the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters. But first, I want to thank a sponsor of this episode, PillPack. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by PillPack. They're a full-service online pharmacy. Pharmacies are much needed places. We have to go. We have to get our medicine. But you don't really want to go there because it's gross and full of germs, just like basically covered in germs. So if you're going there like just to pick up some vitamins or your regular asthma medicine, like you do not want to get near that place. And there is a way that you don't have to get near that place. It's called PillPack, full service online pharmacy. Makes you wonder why you ever settled for that germ-filled traditional pharmacy. PillPack delivers medications and vitamins in pre-sorted, easy-to-tear packets. So get rid of that Monday to Friday pill box. Labels contain the date and the time for each dose. Advanced technology creates personalized packets for each customer. They're always checked by a pharmacist prior to shipping to you. So there's that double check. You don't have to worry. PillPack goes through an image recognition system. It's built to ensure the right pill is in the right pack. They know the size. They can detect this through the size, the shape of the pill, the color, the density, and catalogs an image of every single packet dispensed. You can even order inhalers, like I mentioned before, creams, diabetes supplements, diabetes supplies, and they come in refrigerated, easy-to-open packages. The site is secure. Pharmacists are available 24/7. If you refer someone to PillPack and they sign up, PillPack will donate $100 to RxArt. That's a nonprofit organization whose mission is helping children heal through the extraordinary power of visual art. PillPack has a medication reminder app for your iPhone and your Apple Watch. So visit PillPack.com. If this sounds interesting to you, visit PillPack.com/twit. You can sign up now. Their site is beautiful. It only takes 5 minutes to sign up. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's PillPack.com/TWIT. And we thank PillPack for their support of Tech News Today.
That's right. This just in, we have some breaking news, or at least it's breaking to me. Yes.
What did you break?
Apparently, right before the show went to air, Apple published its site with information for the WWDC.
Do you have the chat room to thank for that?
I do, actually. Oh. Gardner pointed this out, and a few others in chat as well. So thank you all for that. Yeah, they've updated the site. Doesn't that look nice?
So Siri is not going rogue. Stand down.
Okay,
Siri,
stand down, stand down. We can trust Siri rogue. Again.
No, we can't trust Siri. I'm just saying she's not going rogue.
We can tell Siri everything about us. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
We can trust Siri, but she's most often going to say, I'm sorry, I don't know that.
It'll sound a little more robotic than that. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know that.
Yes.
Okay, so obviously here at NAB, having a lot of fun just kind of roaming the show floor and checking everything out, leading up, of course, to our preparation for this show. So I had a little morning out on the floor and had a lot of fun, saw a couple of really cool things and met someone really awesome. We'll talk about that in a second. But first of all, I got the chance, and I believe earlier today here on the stage, actually, Leo got a chance to see this as well. I got a firsthand look at the GoPro Omni. It was actually announced last week, but it was shown off on the floor today. And basically, they're showing off their virtual reality kit. It combines with apps that they've created for Android and iOS. And those apps basically allow you to view kind of the 360-degree imagery that the Omni is producing here. And you can see this was one of the demos. They have their VR goggles on hand as well. So I put that on. It has like an integrated earphones setup, so the earphones go over your ears. You put on their goggles. It was pretty comfortable, pretty nice, tight little package for the most part. And you got to go surfing in Tahiti, essentially, which made me realize I really need to get back to Tahiti. I miss it. And but it looks really great, right? So it's this camera kit. It's based on 6 GoPro Hero cameras. Just 6 of them. They're all synced together in time to one single master camera. It's all done on the inside. And then part of the camera kit is color 360-degree video editing software that allows you to stitch together all that spherical video on a desktop or laptop and produce what you're watching right here, someone surfing with this rig.
So this announcement is mostly for content creators, like who want to buy this rig and make their own 360 content.
For sure. I mean, it really seems like, GoPro is kind of going in the direction of VR and immersive video. It actually makes perfect sense for action sports. On the positive, it makes perfect sense, right? Because action sports, I'm never going to be a stunt BMX rider that's hopping around like a town in Italy from rooftop to rooftop as they were showing at the booth. But if there's immersive 360-degree video mounted to his head of him doing that, you feel like you're there, and it's a perfect fit for GoPro. I think they're kind of betting big on these rigs for people who are doing these things. Now, the downside is that the rig is not necessarily small. I'd probably say, all in all, the actual camera rig is about that big, about the size of my face. And so that, you can imagine, mounted on your head,
yeah,
it's a little unwieldy compared to just like a little GoPro Hero camera or whatever.
Right.
But the benefit you get out of it is pretty impressive, and the content was really nice.
Yeah, those surfers looked like they maybe had some sort of selfie stick kind of holding it, because it wasn't mounted on their heads. The surfing.
Oh, they, yes. Yeah,
that looks
exactly.
Like, yeah, not mounted. Well, I don't know.
No, maybe. That's mounted.
Mounted,
that's
on
mounted
the head.
To the back of the helmet on this ski footage.
I don't know what that would do to your neck.
Well, I don't know. I didn't get to pick it up, but they said it's relatively light, and I don't know what that means when you're mounting something on your head.
Yeah. Well, the helmet, your ski helmet's already.
Yeah, exactly. Down. It's probably just kind of part of the deal. But anyways, very cool. Not inexpensive. It's $5,000. For the whole deal, you can get kind of the enclosure for less than that, obviously.
Yeah. And then if you happen to have 6 GoPro Heroes, 6 is hanging out.
Yeah, no big deal.
Then that's only $1,500.
But cool nonetheless. And you can pre-order right now. So you can pre-order right now, Megan.
Excellent.
If we do Tech News Today next week and you're wearing a helmet, with the Omni on it, I understand why.
Well, thank goodness I have the TWIT credit card, because I might just do it.
Fair enough. So what did you see?
Well, earlier today, we did iOS Today with Leo and Allison Sheridan from Podfeed. She really scoured the floor and found some great things. I definitely think if you're interested at all, you can download that episode. Maybe now, maybe a little bit later, if you're watching the live version of this. You know, the Mevo camera, which we also talked to the guy who is the founder of Mevo. It's a live streaming camera that will live stream right to Facebook or anywhere. And the reason why I loved this is, as you know, I've been a bit grumpy about the ease to which anyone can live stream these days, like just pick up your phone and live stream. And beyond just the fact that, you know, it doesn't look that great and it's a little bit boring to watch, it's, you know, there's also privacy issues. But Mevo will do camera switching within the device, which is, it's awesome. Okay. Like, basically, what they said is they had all these industry clients were like, I want my talk to look like a TED Talk. Like, I want this to look better. So they decided, well, what if consumers maybe also want this? So it is $399 if you order, $399. If you order now, you can get $100 off. And he was saying, like, great for baseball games or just, you know, if live streaming events is important to you, this is something cool. Like, it's small, it's well designed, and yeah, you do camera switching and just more professional video than what you can get straight from your iPhone. So the Mevo, getmevo.com.
And you control that all on your device, it looks like, right? Like, it's doing a broad, wide view in a single fixed place, and then it breaks that down into the multiple shots that you can get out of that wide view. That's pretty cool.
And we also talked to Oliver from Boinks Software. He does a lot of OS X and a lot of iOS software. One thing that I thought was really cool was Photo Wall Plus. Which is really interesting. I use my Apple TV always, like when I, you know, go on a vacation and we take a bunch of pictures and we all sit around and use the Apple TV, look at them that way. And I don't know if you've ever tried to, like, look at photos on your TV, but it used to be just you're installing this and you're plugging in this and then you're just like, wait a minute, I almost got it.
Don't go anywhere.
That is so easy. But what this takes another step where anyone can connect to your network and put their photos on your TV. So if you had a party, like, and everyone was taking pictures or everyone had a bunch of pictures of you that they took, you know, a wedding or something like that, it just seamlessly adds them to your Apple TV from your iPad or your iPhone. So cool little app. And he has a lot of great software, too, Oliver at Boinks.com. So that was some of the stuff that I saw and that we talked about already on iOS Today, and I'm looking forward to seeing some more interesting stuff. It's very overwhelming here to walk around.
It is. There is a lot going on, and there are a lot of products, and sometimes it can be difficult kind of sifting through the amount to get to the really good stuff.
Yeah, and if you are here at NAB, first of all, come say hello to us, and also if you have something that you're showing off that you think we might be interested in, definitely tweet at me at Megan Maroney. Yep. And I'll come swing by and see what you have.
Yeah, the TWIT Studios in the Central Hall. Pretty much you go through the front doors and just walk straight forward a little bit, and you'll find us. We're here at the Live View booth, actually.
Right, and if you're not already here, come here. Las Vegas. It's awesome.
All you have to do is just hop on a plane. No big deal. And finally, I had the honor of speaking with... Oh, there we go. There we go. Speaking with Bob Woodruff. He's ABC World News Tonight anchor. Many of you probably are kind of familiar with his background. He was actually struck by a roadside IED in Iraq in 2006. That was 1 month after he was promoted to lead anchor of their broadcast. He was in a 9-week medically induced coma after that. As you can imagine, completely touch and go. Really didn't know, you know, we're not very convinced that he was going to have any sort of a recovery where he would actually be able to return to work, be able to even, you know, talk normally, all that kind of stuff. More than a year later, he went back to reporting, which was amazing. And today, here at NAB, he was actually honored by NAB itself with the Distinguished Service Award. So I actually had the opportunity to chat with Bob Woodruff. We talked all about his experience, his recovery, the value of family in that recovery. And we've got a clip here where we kind of discuss his life after his life work, basically, his new sense of purpose after the fact of helping veterans who are suffering from injuries and neurologic trauma. Let's take a look. Now, your mission now, after this entire crazy experience, extends definitely beyond your own story to the soldiers who, by and large, on a daily basis, they face these challenges every day. And I'm sure this has brought you kind of closer to the kind of support that they have. Are they getting enough support, do you think, at this point?
I think it's getting better. I mean, back in the very beginning of these wars, they had kinds of wounds that were brand new in this world, the ones of the IED explosions, and they knew very little about traumatic brain injury within the military at that time. But now they've learned tons of it. I don't think any of us ever to say there's being being done enough, right? So we are now trying to share that kind of responsibility between the governments. Assistance for them, and then also in the civilian world. So we are raising a lot of money with the foundation that we started to try to match up what the government is accomplishing, but there's other things that need to be done, and that's continuing, probably for the rest of our lifetime.
It was a fantastic interview. I was humbled to have the chance to talk with him, and I felt like, can I actually talk to someone who's made their career doing this sort of thing? And he was super awesome. And anyways, we're going to have the full interview along with all of the other coverage from NAB that we've been, collecting as we kind of roam the halls here and take a look at everything at as a Twit special. So just go to twit.tv/specials. We're going to have the Woodruff interview and all of the awesome products that we saw today. Father Robert also had some interviews today, and that's all going to be there. I think it posts late tonight. You'll probably find it tomorrow morning if you fall asleep. I know you'll be waiting at your podcast catcher for that. It's okay if you fall asleep. You can watch it in the morning.
I think you did great in this interview. It's amazing. I know there's a lot of our viewers and listeners who are veterans themselves, so thank you for your service. And I think this is a huge problem with no answer right now. I mean, just a generation of people with injuries that we have never seen before in any past war. And so I just applaud people that are making a difference here, because I just think that, I feel lucky to live in a world where there are so many people who did give so much of their lives for us. So thank you.
For sure. All right, moving on. We got an email from some stuff that we were talking about on Friday.
Yes, Mike in South Florida wrote regarding our discussion about cable boxes. He says, while I was waiting for a flight out of Atlanta, I had an interesting discussion with a guy who works for a major cable company. He shared they actually make more money from cord cutters than traditional cable TV subscribers. Basically, with all the channel fees that they incur, the company really does not make much off of traditional cable TV. However, when someone drops a cable TV box off, they are more likely to increase their internet speed package, which of course is provided by the same company. Internet service is a way more profitable for them than cable TV. Never thought about it, but it makes sense. Thank you, Mike. I had not thought about this either, but it's absolutely true. I gave up my cable box a decade ago, and at some points, I have Comcast, and they were like, you can pay less if you also get TV. And I said, I don't want TV. Like, I don't even want to pay less for TV.
I know that one.
I just want internet. I just want my Netflix and my Amazon Prime, and I don't want your TV. It is interesting because we're always talking about, take that Comcast. But, they're like, you're a cord cutter. We still make a lot of money from you.
Right. They kind of cut out an extra layer, and it's almost like money direct to a certain degree. It ties in kind of what we were talking about earlier in the show, that sometimes cutting the cord isn't about saving costs. It's just about kind of narrowing your options, Because I got pulled into the same thing, too. We were threatening to leave Comcast or whatever. It's, we can lower it. And when I really thought of kind of the math behind it, I was like, we could do the Netflix and the Amazon Prime, blah, blah, blah. But, for like $5 or $10 more a month, but then we end up getting everything, But then you end up spending a lot of time watching TV, and maybe the value there is just in that you aren't as enticed to do that,
right?
Which is, I think, what has been the case for me.
Yeah, I
found myself very productive in other ways ever since we kind of cut the cable, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think. All right, so coming up, drones and planes sharing the skies. Many have wondered if collision was only a matter of time. Well, I think we may have our first collision in that regard. We're going to talk about that, but first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of today's episode, and that is Epson. Epson's revolutionary EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. It's it's a pretty great time to have a printer right now because they do so many amazing things, and this is very different. This is very cool. The new EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer doesn't use ink cartridges. Instead, it actually features an innovative refillable ink tank. It comes with enough ink so you can print up to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. That's equivalent to around 50 ink cartridge sets. You're loaded, you're ready to print for up to 2 years. It's powered by Epson's leading edge precision core technology. And it's just super fast. It delivers high speed, vivid colors, laser quality black text, plus auto two-sided printing, a 30-page auto document feeder, and easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. It's no wonder the ET4550 printer was actually named a CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. All EcoTank printers deliver just an excellent combination of convenience and value. Ultra-low cost replacement ink bottles are integral to that. Now you have the freedom to print without running out of ink. So check it out for yourself. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, your office, or your work group prints. And for the best combination of ease and value, you just turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. That's Epson.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for their support. Epson, exceed your vision.
All right, we got a fan of the day today.
TNT's fan of the day is sburnett2010 on Instagram. Sent us this picture, as many people do, of multiple screens in their setup and TNT in a little window. And in the case of this picture that they sent in, TNT, it's like TNT fan of the day inception. We've got sburnett2010's fan of the day image, and then inside it is a different image of a fan of the day from the past.
Your mind just
exploded a little bit. I can tell. Anyways, there you go. We appreciate you guys sending those in. As always, show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself, your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Facebook, or Twitter. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will look. And then when we find it, we'll put it into a document, and then we'll put it on the show someday. Mm-hmm. I promise you.
We promise. All right. Many sources are reporting that a drone hit a British Airways flight with passengers in it.
Ooh.
But they're reporting that it might have been a drone.
I mean, it happens so fast, right?
Yeah.
And you're up in the sky, so do you actually know?
I don't know. No drone parts have been found, but okay. I mean, I guess could a drone be obliterated by a plane? Like, I don't think I understand enough about planes.
I'm guessing yes.
Yeah. But I know birds can end up in the... But yeah, I don't know. This is so interesting because I think, like, you say the word drone and people freak out about it.
Yeah.
Yes, it's dangerous. Nothing happened. They landed fine. No one was hurt.
They actually sent the plane out later that day. Like, they cleared it for use again, almost immediately.
So, yeah, I think that it's unfortunate if a drone were to hit a plane, but more birds hit planes. They're more of a risk. They're just not news anymore. So we don't hear every time a bird hits a plane. In fact, 1,400 birds hit planes every year. And so far this year, only 600, well, last year, 650 drones were spotted by pilots.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I think a big reason why there will probably always be more birds than drones hitting planes. And not getting into the aspect of, like, what about, like, their body density, like a drone density versus a bird's density, mm-hmm. and how that actually affects a gigantic plane, mm-hmm. they're probably pretty insignificant, but there's a lot of people kind of studying this right now. But it's just the fact that birds fly in flocks, which take up a lot more space just collectively, versus a drone, which is literally a little speck in the sky that has to be timed just right. So I don't know. I have a feeling we'll probably always hear more. I mean, it's probably more likely that the birds are going to continue hitting the planes. And I think it's generally, I mean, it seems to not, like, they have a handle on it. Like planes have redundancy that they're built with. So, like, if an engine goes out, they can still land a plane without one engine and stuff like that. But I don't know how many planes are actually falling to the ground because a bird flew into it.
I don't know those stats.
So, I mean, I don't know if it's that big a deal. It sounds bad.
No, I think that's the thing.
I just need a headline.
I'm going to put drone in it, and then everyone's going to click on it, including me. But this one was just suspect. Everyone was like, it hit a drone. It might have hit a drone. We suspect it hit a drone. We're investigating it.
And I think in this case, it hit the front of the plane. Like, they actually, you know, came along and it hit the, just the front of the plane. It didn't necessarily get into the jet. And that's what I would worry about. Is if, you know, a bird flies into a jet or a drone flies into a jet, I have to imagine that's, you know, probably has the most potential for something to happen. Mm-hmm. But there again, redundancy.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. And thankfully, modern planes are built with that in mind to protect them.
So. Yeah. So, I mean, I think drones, live streaming to some extent, and Google Glass, like all of these things are hotspots because people are very protective in some ways of their privacy. In many ways, people are just like very dismissive of their privacy. They don't think about it. But in these ways, it's like, oh, a drone is going to spy on me. You know, your live stream is going to spy on me. And, you know, your Google Glass is going to spy on me. And it's very scary to people. And I get it. But,
if drones are spying on people, then it's okay that they get blasted out of the sky sometimes.
That's what a lot of people probably think.
Yeah.
Is that what you think?
As long as the plane is okay. Well, I don't know. I don't want a drone spying on me. But I know people go to extreme measures to take those drones out of the sky. I don't know if I condone that, but I don't know. That's a challenge until I've been spied on by a drone. I'll let you know if that ever happens or that I ever know about it. That's it.
Yeah.
I
want to thank New Tech for providing the TriCaster we're using today.
Yes.
Lots of people to thank. LiveView, that's where we are in the LiveView booth. That's where you'll find us.
Yeah. They're actually broadcasting all of our stuff back to the studio.
And doing it well. I mean, you know, people are watching
it. It's what they do.
Yes. So, and Panasonic, they provided some of the pan tilt camera.
That we're staring at, right? I'm staring at you, Panasonic camera. Yeah, it's doing
It's not looking at you, though.
There we go.
Thanks. A lot of people brought us here, and I am grateful because I am having a great time, and I continue to have a great time tomorrow and the next day.
That's right. We've got two more days of TNT, anyways, from here at the stage at NAB. Tomorrow's guest is actually going to be Scott Wilkinson. Always love having Scott on, our very own home theater geek. Going to be up on stage here with us talking about all the tech and some of the kind of home theater-y stuff that's sprinkled throughout NAB. So lots to look forward to there. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC. You can always take part in the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail. It's 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find our show on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
And you can subscribe to the show. That's how you get it first on however you use it.
Including
Google Play Music. Yep. You can subscribe there. twit.tv/TNT. We're on Facebook. Join us there. And you can subscribe to our newsletter. That's twit.tv/newsletter. And I am on Twitter and love to get your tweets. And at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Brian Burnett. And everyone here at the booth, especially, that is helping us to produce this show and bring you all of this awesome content.
Yes, thanks, John,
from
too.
From the floor of NAB. Thank you, John. just everybody. There's so many people here that are helping.
And Colleen.
You all are awesome.
Thank you, Colleen.
And thanks. Thanks to all. And Russell. And Carson.
And Carson.
And you. And you were there. And you were there. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.